Good afternoon. It's 3 o'clock. You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau. And this is Pat Moore. I'll be the guest host today on Juneau Afternoon. We'll be talking with Jess Brown and Terry Thibodeau about the family pre-party for Friday's Soberfest. Bruce Simonson will drop in to tell us about the upcoming Handel's Messiah program, a year-long concert series. And we'll also get an in-depth look today at the Juneau Economic Development Council's report on Juneau and Southeast Alaska economic indicators. Nancy DeCherney will help us close out the show today with her news and views about local activities during Arts Up. All of that today on Juneau Afternoon. It's a beautiful day in Juneau. The weather outside is calling for rain, but we haven't seen much of it today. Areas of fog this afternoon, highs around 48. Southwest winds 10 to 15 miles per hour.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. A prominent Aboriginal leader in Manitoba, Canada, is ousted from his job. As Dan Karpinchuk reports, a group of family representatives at the Rosie River First Nation have voted to get rid of Chief Terry Nelson.
Under Canada's Indian Act, First Nations have the option of moving to a political system that's entirely community-based. That's how a custom council at the Rousseau River First Nation was able to oust their chief. It's not the first time Terry Nelson has been turfed. In fact, it's the third time he's been ousted at the troubled Ojibwe First Nation. Nelson says the latest attempt was triggered by a dispute over how to handle money set aside for housing from a federal government compensation package. Martha LaRocque is on the Custom Council. She and other members say they're frustrated with Nelson, claiming he's withholding information about the reserve's multi-million dollar trust fund.
We haven't no cooperation from Terry. Like we've been asking, we send him letters and letters to give us a financial report and all that. Like, we don't even know what's happening to the kids' trust funds. Some of us said that's enough. Enough is enough.
Nelson says he too is frustrated by the internal struggle, and he will ask the people of Rousseau River for a mandate to change the constitution and remove the custom council's authority once and for all. The council is elected along with Nelson and is still recognized as the reserve's legitimate council. For National Native News, I'm Dan Karpinchuk.
In Anchorage, Alaska, hundreds of people are focusing on issues like funding, diabetes, and suicide prevention at the National Indian Health Board Conference. KMBA's Jocelyn Estes reports.
Patrick Anderson is executive director of Chugachmute, which provides health, social, and other services to seven Alaskan villages. He says a Kaiser Permanente study shows many behavioral problems are caused by what's called adverse childhood experiences.
They include having an absent biological parent, having a parent who is in prison, having a depressed family member, having an alcoholic family member, being physically abused, physically neglected, emotionally abused, emotionally neglected, witnessing domestic violence in the household, or having been the victim of contact sexual abuse.
Anderson says Alaska Natives have a higher number of such experiences, which can lead to an overactive system that constantly sends hormonal messages to fight or flee. He says such people may turn to alcoholism, gambling, or even depression to calm themselves. He suggests counseling, a healthy diet, and alternative therapies, such as meditation, as possible remedies. The National Indian Health Board Convention continues through Thursday. Reporting in Anchorage, I'm Jocelyn Estes.
Broadcasters from Afghanistan see a native radio station in Arizona as a model for their stations back home. There's been a growth in radio stations in Afghanistan since the fall of the Taliban, many created with money from the U.S., but with funding issues, stations are seeking long-term solutions. KAWC's Lou Gum reports.
Nine radio broadcasters from three provinces in eastern Afghanistan, Kunar, Nuristan, and Nangarhar, visited KGHR, Navajo Public Radio, in Tuba City on the Navajo Reservation. From landscape to diverse tribal communities, Sabawun Zaland, business manager at a small station in Jalalabad, the capital of the Nangarhar province, says after visiting larger radio stations in Washington, D.C. and Phoenix, the smaller Tribone station was more familiar.
At the KGHR radio station, that is pretty, you know, just like the ones that exist in Afghanistan in Jalalabad City. And also, it's really interesting to know about the cultures and the religions of these peoples. So it's quite exciting for us.
Along with some classes, the broadcasters hope to learn how to engage their communities to support their stations. The broadcasters also toured sacred sites on the Navajo and Hopi reservations with an eye toward preserving their own historic sites, many of which were destroyed or vandalized by the Taliban. For National Native News, I'm Lou Gum.
During this month in 2010, Daniel Lipke took office as the first ever police chief of the Ho-Chunk Nation of Wisconsin. It was a major step by the tribe to establish its own police force. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kawanic Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation. Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
It's 5 minutes after three here at KTOO, and I'm Pat Moore. I'm guest hosting today for the Juno Afternoon program. And in me, in the studio with me here, one of whom just rushed in and is probably slightly breathless, are Terry Thibodeau and Jess Brown. Jess is with the Zach Gordon Youth Center. And they're here to talk to us about part of an event that will be tomorrow evening called Soberfest. And so probably a moment or two about what Soberfest is. I know that Jeff's going to be talking to someone about Soberfest tomorrow, but maybe some people don't know that the event is happening.
Soberfest is in two parts this year, and it happens tomorrow, Friday, September 30th, and the first part is the Zach Gordon pre-party, Soberfest pre-party, family pre-party that's happening, and I'm going to let Jess, who's from Zach Gordon, talk about that. But the other part of it is the evening event, which begins at 6:30 at the Juno Arts and Culture Center, and I'll talk more about that later, but maybe we should go ahead and talk about the pre-event at Zach Gordon Youth Center.
So, Jess, I think you're on.
All right. So we've got the Soberfest pre-party at the Zach Gordon Youth Center from 4 to 7 tomorrow. And we will have some pool and ping pong tournaments with some prizes to give away. And additionally, we'll have some basketball and rock climbing and all of our usual fun recreation things going on.
So you're basically opening up the Zach Gordon Center to people who are probably going to be going to the Soberfest later?
Yes.
Now, are those two events necessary? Do you have to do them together, or can someone come to yours?
No,
Okay. Okay, and you're aiming this primarily at families?
Yes.
So,
I certainly won't turn anyone away, though.
Right. Okay. Now, Zach Gordon has a lot of recreational facilities in the center. You're talking about a pool and a ping pong tournament and some other things that people can do. Can you kind of give us an idea of the range of recreational opportunities that somebody might take advantage of tomorrow?
Okay. So we'll start our pool and ping pong tournaments around 4:30, and we'll have our climbing wall stacked from 3:30 until 7. And we've got a basketball court, both indoor and outdoor. And the basketball court indoor doubles as a racquetball court, in case that appeals to anyone. And I believe we'll have some food and just some fun activities all around.
Is this like just an open door deal at Zach Gordon, or do people need to call in advance or anything like that? Is a reservation necessary at all?
No reservation. It's absolutely open door all the time at Zach Gordon.
And is there a charge for any of the activities there?
No.
No. And if a family showed up and wanted to enter the pool tournament, then so mom and dad and the kids could all be a team or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, how will people move then from the family pre-party over to I believe the Soberfest is at the Jack, is that right?
Yeah, and so Zach Gordon Youth Center is downtown, real close to Centennial Hall. It shares the same parking lot as Centennial Hall, and it also shares the same parking lot as the Juno Arts and Culture Center, which is also known as the Jack. And so you can just walk from the Zach Gordon Youth Center across the parking lot to the Jack, and that you can start doing that anytime from 6:30 on. So, in other words, you can go to that, Gordon, from 4 to 7, and then 6:30 to 11 is the Soberfest event at the Jack. And what Soberfest is, it's an event that we're holding here in the community that is a it's to celebrate recovery and recovery from alcoholism, drug abuse, mental illness, and it is an alcohol-free event, and we're going to have live music with a dance band. They start at 8 o'clock. We're going to have some addiction professionals and mental health professional awards. That's starting at 7:30, so 7:30 to 8. And there are 5 people throughout the community are being honored, but I'm not going to say their names yet because some of them are being surprised. And then also at 7 o'clock, I'm going backwards, of course, but at 7 o'clock, there's a singer-songwriter who is personally in recovery and is offered to perform on the topic of recovery and or maybe just songs inspired by his recovery. And so he's going to play from 7 to 7:30. And then there's going to be pizza, tickets for pizza and beverages, non-alcoholic beverages. There's going to be hula hoops for dancing with we're going to have paddle balls, fun things to do, as well as information tables from all the different providers around town who provide mental health and substance abuse services. So it's going to be a party slash informational event, Soberfest.
The Soberfest family pre-party starts at 4 o'clock at Zach Gordon. After 6:30, if you want to, you can walk across the parking lot, leave your car parked in the same place, the craziness of parking around Centennial Hall, and then the party at the Jack goes on until 11 o'clock with all of those things that you mentioned.
Yeah.
And we'll be going into more detail on some of those things tomorrow when Jeff interviews. Are you coming in tomorrow to talk about?
Yes, I'll be coming in, and Michelle Federico will be coming in from Gasno Human Services.
And so the two of you will have a lot more details on what's going to be happening tomorrow.
Definitely. Mm-hmm.
Well, thank you very much, ladies, for coming down. I wish you a great success with this event.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Thank you for having
thank
us.
Thank you.
Bye.
Music by Tay Vaca. They'll be doing a concert Sunday at the high school, I guess, this coming Sunday, so should be very interesting. We're going to be talking now with a gentleman who's going to be doing music throughout the year, I guess. So my guest now is Bruce Simonson, who's going to talk to us about a program involving Handel's Messiah.
Hi, Pat. Thanks for having me.
Pleased you could come in, Bruce.
Yeah. Well, anyway, the idea is that Juno Lyric Opera has decided to put on a full performance of Handel's Messiah. Typically, you do only part of it at Christmas, and people think of it as a Christmas work. But it really is longer than that, and involves things that are appropriate for the Easter season as well. So there's a lot of music, and we're going to have choruses and soloists and all that kind of stuff. Our plan is to rehearse the music over the course of the year, do part of it at Christmas, and do all of it in April.
Messiah is it's written by Georg Friedrich Handel, but it's actually the lyrics are in English, right?
That's right.
So you can understand what's going on.
Absolutely.
A major advantage for an opera.
Yeah, exactly, for this work. It's kind of unique in the genre for, you know, community choruses, because you don't have to struggle with language change and all that sort of stuff, as well as it's very familiar, and a lot of people already know it, and so it's an opportunity. In fact, I was just having lunch with J. Allen McKinnon. You probably know that name, or maybe don't, but he is famous for his work with Messiah and Juno over the years. And the last time that Juno did it, cover to cover, the whole thing, was in 1982. Mm. So when we do it in 2012, it'll be like a 30th anniversary of that. So that's kind of cool. Our hope is to involve as many folks as want to participate. And so we have high school kids involved in it as well, so it'll be full community thing. The main thing to announce is that starting tonight, actually, we have a thing called a Sing Fest, which is just show up and sing through it, and we're just going to blast through the numbers and have fun with it in anticipation for rehearsals on Thursday nights starting basically next week.
So now this SingFest is tonight at what time?
That's right. The SingFest is actually a two-day event. It's Thursday night and Friday night of this week at Resurrection Lutheran Church. That's downtown. It's 7 p.m. and it'll run until about 9 o'clock, something like that.
So bring your singing voice and you'll warm them up, right?
That's right. We'll warm up and we'll do mostly choruses, although my intent is to do some of the solos. So people who may or be considering doing solos would like to take a stab at that. We'll see what some of them are like, and we'll have auditions for that later on in the month.
I seem to remember about 300 descending 16th notes on We Will Purify the last time I did a sing-along Messiah.
Oh, you got it right. Hey, you know the work, yeah. There are. What's interesting about it is that there are, I think, 20 choruses, and some of them are not so hard, and some of them are pretty challenged, but the Purify one is kind of up there in the top, and they're fun. They're really fun.
Yeah. So this should be a real community involvement event. You're going to try to bring as many people as you can into the performances.
That's correct. I expect we'll have a fairly large adult chorus, and probably, we've handed out scores to the high schools. Both high schools have 25 scores each, and we're just making those as a donation, where each kid gets to keep their own score for forever and ever, to speak. And then there will also be youth choirs. I think Floyd Dryden might be involved, but the Alaska Youth Choir will be involved in it as well. So by the time we're done, I wouldn't be surprised if we have over 100 singers in the chorus anyway.
Right. Will there be a sing-along event like the ones I've participated in around Christmas time?
That's part of the plan. The Christmas concert will probably have at least some of the numbers will be sing-along. And I'm trying to figure out what to do in April. I think we'll sing it cover to cover maybe twice, and then maybe an abbreviated form where there'll be sing-along and that kind of thing. We do have lots of events scheduled. We probably have soloist workshops and maybe even a conductor workshop in March. People who conduct church choirs and things like that maybe want to take a stab at conducting a chorus out of Messiah, because the chorus will be well rehearsed by then.
If people don't remember every detail of what's coming up here, they can find this out probably on the Lyric Opera website.
That's correct. It's JunoOpera.org, or you can just do a query in Google on Juno Lyric Opera. And it does actually just begin this evening. It's a couple of nights of blast through it, and then we'll be doing rehearsals through the rest of the year and various performances and events, and they'll all be on the website.
Yeah. So one more time, that the event tonight is at 7 o'clock at
Resurrection
Lutheran.
7 to 9, and also tomorrow night, 7 to 9 at Resurrection Lutheran.
Just a walk-in, no reservations required.
No, I should also say there's no auditions. We will have auditions for soloists, so those would like to try that. But for the chorus, it's just come and have a good time.
Just come and have a good time. Outstanding. Yeah. Thank you very much for coming down and telling us.
Thank you, Pat. I appreciate it. Thanks.
Bye.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Thursday. It's the 29th of September, 2011. Today is Michaelmas, the feast day of the Archangel Michael in the Christian world, a very important day in times past. It fell near the equinox and marked the fast darkening of the days in the northern world. It was the end of the harvest, the time for farm people to calculate how many animals they could afford to feed through the winter and which ones would be sold or slaughtered. It was the end of the fishing season, the beginning of hunting, the time to pick apples and make cider. It was also a day for settling rents and accounts, which farmers often paid for with a brace of birds from the flocks that they had hatched that spring. Geese were given to the poor, and their down was plucked and sold for the filling of mattresses and pillows. Michaelmas was the time of the traditional printer's celebration, the day on which printers broke from their work to form the last of their pulp into paper with which to cover their open windows against the coming cold, because they could not afford glass. In the past, the traditional Michaelmas meal would have been a roast goose, the big gray goose. People would also bake blackberries into pies and crumbles, and they would bake St. Michael's bannocks, a large flat scone of oats and barley and rye, baked on a hot griddle, eaten with butter or honey or blackberry preserves. Today is the day thought to have been the birthday of Cervantes, Miguel de Cervantes, the author of Don Quixote, born the fourth of seven children in a small university town near Madrid. He was a soldier by his early 20s. He was in a major naval battle and sustained 3 gunshot wounds, which rendered his left hand useless. Went back to active duty, was captured by pirates, carried off to Algiers, held prisoner for 5 years until the ransom was paid, and then he came back to Spain deeply in debt for the ransom, had to earn a living as a tax collector, a job for which he had little aptitude. He was also writing plays, wrote 20 to 30 fairly successful plays in a 6-year span, and his first novel, The Galatea, came out in 1585, and then in 1605, his magnum opus, Don Quixote, the story of an elderly but absurd knight-errant and his squire, a book with an immense panorama of individuals and adventures, written with humor and compassion for the human condition, that have made it a beloved book to so many readers for more than 400 years. Don Quixote, which has come to be considered the first modern novel, and by many critics considered to be among the best works of fiction ever written. Here's a poem for today by Ann Porter, Living Things. Our poems are like the warthogs in the zoo. It's hard to say why there should be such creatures. But once our life gets into them, as sometimes happens, our poems turn into living things, and there's no arguing with living things. They are the way they are. Our poems may be rough or delicate, little or great, but always they have inside them a confluence of cries and secret languages, and always they are improvident and free. They keep a kind of Sabbath. Living Things, a poem by Ann Porter, from An Altogether Different Language, published by Zoland Books and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine. You can read the current issue of Poetry or listen to the monthly editor's podcast at poetryfoundation.org. And by Novo Nordisk since 1923, innovative developer of diabetes treatments and delivery devices at novonordisk-us.com. Produced by Kathy Roach and Nick Vetter, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
It's 3:22. You're in tune with KTOO FM in Juneau, and I'm Pat Moore, the guest host for Juneau Afternoon. Our next guest is Brian Holst, who is the executive director for the Juneau Economic Development Council, and the JEDC has just come out with a major report, which is available around town. It's 74 pages long, and is a is one of probably the most encyclopedic summaries, I think, of economic factors about Southeast Alaska and Juneau in particular. Welcome, Brian.
Thank you for having me back.
How does a report like this come about?
Well, the Juneau Economic Development Council has been compiling information like this for many years. And we do it so that we can provide business leaders, political leaders, citizens with better information so that they can make, you know, good decisions about or better informed decisions in their lives and in their economic lives, business lives. And how does this get done? We are supported by the City and Borough of Juneau. They give us some core support each year, and so resources from there. Plus, we have sponsors, which I'm going to give a shout out to them, a few of them if I can at some point, that provide us additional resources specifically to conduct research and to make available the research that we're able to compile. We are very fortunate to have a lot of collaboration from many organizations. While we do some original work, most of our work and most of our research effort is bringing together information from many different sources and putting it into a comprehensive booklet. I do want to give a little recognition to Melanie Shivens, program officer at JEDC. this is a task that she puts a lot of effort into. And while, you know, we stand behind it as an organization, you know, she deserves special mention for the hard work that she puts into making sure that tracking all these numbers and helping to pull this together this year, as she's done in the past as well.
Well, it certainly is an encyclopedic effort. What I'd like to do to begin with is kind of get an overview from you of what the content of the report is and what some of the major trends that you've discovered are for Southeast Alaska and particularly for Juneau.
And for your listeners, I want to make clear what this report is about is giving us it's looking back and sort of understanding where we are. This isn't a report that has a lot of projections in it. And we're happy to talk about some of our own thoughts about where we think things are going. But where this is useful is it helps us to see the path that we're on. And we can all then infer from this, you know, where we might be going. And what we're seeing in 2010, again, this looks back to 2010 because it takes a while for all the data to become available. But from 2009 to 2010, we see that population is up, employment is up, payroll is up, unemployment is down, school enrollment is up, housing starts are up, home values are increasing, which is mostly positive. That we will talk about the affordable housing issue in Juneau, which increasing home values doesn't necessarily help those that are yet to get into a home. So this. We see from 2009, 2010 that Juneau has really done well. We haven't completely recovered from 2008. 2008 was a difficult year for Juneau, but we're doing much better. The recession, the national recession that has affected so much of our nation, it seems that it's behind us, certainly here in Juneau. And that data is throughout the report, where you'll see that many important indicators for our community are looking quite positive.
Brian, a lot of people seem to think that Alaska is kind of exempt from the recession. You hear people say, well, it isn't going to hit us up here. Can you summarize what kind of effects that economic explosion had on us?
Yeah, you know, as a state, that is true. And in fact, it was, I think the recession was severe enough nationally that a 20-year growth trend was stopped for a moment, even in Alaska, slowed down considerably. But Alaska is a resource state, and so we don't run exactly in the same cycle as the rest of the nation. And while high oil prices are bad for most of our nation, they happen to be very good for us, as well as the high resource prices. Those both have been very supportive of the state economy, and of course here in Juneau, with being such a large government employment center, it's kept government stable as well. What has hurt us in this national recession is certainly tourism, and we saw in 2008 some very significant drops in tourism in cruise ship passengers. That hasn't recovered yet, but looking out to next year, it looks like it will be going back up again.
What's a significant drop in cruise ship passengers?
We lost in 2000, compared to 2009 and 2008, from we were over a million, and we dropped down to about 875,000. So about 143,000 fewer cruise ship passengers in 2009 and 2010. And that's extremely significant. That it's important, though, as tough as that was on our local business community, our tourism community, if you look at the long-term trends, we see that if you look at a decade by decade, we still see this incredible growth in the number of cruise ship passengers. And there's every indication that we're going to be back to where we were in the next few years, and because cruise industry is making money again, had a very profitable year. And that's really what drives, they have a number of berths on the ships, and it's a very simple supply and demand model. If they have too many berths out there and there's not a lot of demand, it drives down the price. and it reduces, of course, their profits. So you take some ships off of out of circulation. To match better with demand, get the prices back up where you're making profit again, and then you slowly start to expand. And that's where we were. So several ships brought out, and now the ships are scheduled to come back. A couple ships expected to come back next year, which will, because the prices are higher now, and they can sustain those.
However, the report, I think, says that next year we can expect to be down just a little bit, and then the real gain is in 2013. Is that?
In 2012.
Okay.
We will see changes. In 2011, we're just really still getting the last numbers. It appears to be very similar to 2010.
Mm. But a little increase in that tourism.
Yeah, right. We're going to have Disney came online this year. It made up for some of the losses we've seen from ships that have pulled away. And we are seeing there will be some new ships brought back to Alaska next summer.
Now, I think a lot of people think that the cruise industry and some of the other industries that operate in Juneau tend to make their money here but to take it out and not really benefit the Juneau economy. Can you address that at all?
It's all relative. Certainly, the cruise industries as corporations are looking to make a profit on the passengers. They market very heavily. They invested very heavily in these cruise ships, and they expect a return on that investment. Every cruise ship passenger that comes through Juneau is a benefit to our community. They spend, and the amount of money that they spend per day is something that is fluctuating, but it's we expect it's hundreds of thousands of dollars every day that ships are in town.
And so that hundreds of thousands of dollars a day that's spent, some of it does go to the outside corporations, but a portion of it passes right into Juneau.
No, when I say hundreds of thousands, these are shopping hosts. I hate to state a number when I'm 100% sure, but I'll go ahead and do it.
Okay.
It's something in the ballpark of $150 to $180 per passenger that we expect them to leave when they visit Juneau.
That basically just turns around within our economy.
Right. They'll spend that on taking a helicopter tour. It's the average. They'll buy a souvenir. They'll stop in a restaurant. They'll go out to the glacier. Vendors and other businesses off the ships. That's about what people can expect to each passenger to leave behind directly into Juneau's economy, which is a tremendous, tremendous benefit.
Now, there are other major sources of income. The biggest one is probably government in Southeast Alaska or in Juneau, at least, and other sources that kind of come in. Could you briefly describe the nature of our economy as far as where the money is?
Yeah, absolutely. And when we look at wages here in Juneau, our economy is a... We're very much a government. Government has an extremely high role in our preponderance in our economy. You know, state government, in terms of wages, just to give you some sense of percentages, state government represents about 25% of wages, federal government another 11%, local and tribal another 9%. It's about 45% of the wages in Juneau are from government jobs. It's about 40%. In Southeast Alaska, we're even more heavily weighted than the rest of the region. Then from there, there are various other sectors. You know, healthcare is sort of in order of the amount of wages in our community. Healthcare, tourism, construction, mining, retail trade, professional services. That's what really rounds out the rest of Juneau's earnings.
And one of the biggest gains in jobs and income in the last year was in the mining industry, I believe.
The mining industry has really done extremely well with Kensington Mine coming online, and they represent a huge increase for our community. The employment in the mining industry went up significantly. It's In 2010, it rose to about 536 jobs, and we expect those to increase slightly more as both Kensington gets into full operation for a full year.
And throughout the report, you give comparative income or salary values, wage values for people who are working in those industries. I was interested to learn that mining is one of the highest paid occupations that is in Juneau.
Absolutely. At $96,000 per year, that's our...
That's an average.
That's our average, right? When I say that...
there's going to be somebody listening to say, I'm not making 96 grand.
That. Yeah, exactly. And that's true. And that's, yeah, and don't get too upset at your boss. Not everyone can make the same. And of course, in mining, it's extremely hard work. There are risks involved. As very sadly, we saw that just a few weeks ago. There's a lot of overtime involved as well. So it's we don't want to begrudge anybody those wages. The federal government is also very...
I think they were second highest.
That's right.
Yeah,
at $86,000 again,
average
right. per year. The average income of a average salary here in Juneau is $44,000.
$44,000. Now, how does that... I think our cost of living is about 1.3 times the rest of the world or something like that. I think we're about 30% higher and then higher in the housing by a considerable amount, around 66% higher than the rest of the nation. Are those numbers right, I think?
They are. They're very, very close. And I'll try to, since I'm on the radio, I'll try to make sure I'm accurate here. But it is expensive to live in Juneau. There are many ways to come up with a number. I mean, depends on how you, not everybody consumes exactly the same. So we got to be reasonable when we look at these numbers. But it's approximately 40% more expensive to live in Juneau than a typical city in the United States. And that makes us about 10% more expensive than Anchorage, about the same cost as Fairbanks. What really hurts Juneau when we look at the cost of living is housing. Housing is very expensive in Juneau, and that has a big impact on the cost of living here, making it difficult. When you look at Juneau's economy, people often say, "Well, you know, we need more jobs." In Juneau, really, we don't have a problem with jobs.
Our unemployment is less than the national average and never took the dip that the national average did.
That's right. Our unemployment rate did rise a bit, and certainly if you were one of those that lost your job, that's very significant. So I want to be careful when we talk about gross numbers here, but we're looking at the entire community.
Nationwide, it was close to 10%. In Juneau, it was around 6.
That's right.
So
that's right.
Is around 6.
And Juneau tends to be. Have the second lowest unemployment rate in the state, behind the North Slope. So in Juneau, our challenge is not having jobs. There are many places right now that have openings. It is the challenge is having jobs that pay enough so that people can really enjoy living here. You know, especially with the very high cost of housing, we all know these anecdotal stories about people that love Juneau, come here, want to stay here, and then find that it's hard to make ends meet in our community, and have the sort of have the home, have the space that they'd like to have, and that's our challenge in terms of jobs is creating more jobs that pay wages that allow families to be able to stay and thrive here in our community.
I think one of the tables in the report that really brings that out is the one on page 19, which is a table that shows median household income and median family income. And elsewhere in the report, back on page 8, you talk about the cost of living being about 39% higher. I think that's the ACRA. You use the ACCRA numbers to get a 39% value as the highest possible cost of living increase. There's only 40.5% between the United States median family income and the Juneau median family income. So basically what we're trying to do is after we cover the difference in cost of living between the two communities, we're basically living on 1.5% increase. That's what we have for recreation and all of the other things that are so much fun to do in Southeast Alaska.
Great analysis.
So
I'm glad you've paid attention. You've read the report. Thank you very much for that.
Well,
and shouting out numbers, I hope people will go online at jedc.org, and you can download the report and you can look at it online and you can read these.
Now, I have a lovely bound volume of it. Is this available around town? Can people pick this up?
Because of the cost of putting that together, we have made about 700 of these, and they go quickly.
I feel like I should give mine back.
No, please.
I wrote all over it.
No, it's yours, definitely yours. And if anyone comes by at JDC offices, we're happy to give you a copy. We're not able to... unless we find a benefactor that's able to print us more copies, we will give out copies until we run out. But it's always available online. And this year we have we've had online indicators for some time, several years now. And Milani, who works very hard on this project, has put together we have a really unique feature on there. You can make a custom report for yourself. Mm. So if you go online, not only can you download our full report, but let's say you're not interested in seeing all of this information, it's set up now. You have to scroll around a little bit and explore, but it's set up now where you can actually go and click on the topics that you'd like to see, and then it'll generate a report for you that's customized. And I think that would be useful, I think, for, we hope, anyway. And we're looking forward to people giving us feedback. We hope that's useful for some organizations that may be interested in maybe the housing issues, or somebody else interested in a certain industry, or somebody interested in the demographics, to not have to download larger reports and try to focus in on some issues that are more interest to them.
We've talked a lot concentrating on the Juneau economy, but Southeast Alaska's economic picture is not as pretty and rosy as the Juneau economic picture is. Could you talk briefly about some of the the booklet is organized so that you see a page on Juneau and then you flip and then you have another page on Southeast Alaska that are most of the same statistics.
Yeah, it largely is. I mean, this is the mission of JADC is to support economic development in Juneau and Southeast Alaska. So our focus is on Juneau, but it's very important for us to understand the context of our neighbors. And yes, what we see in the region is the region has continued to suffer from the loss of the timber industry. That was a very important industry in our region. It's an industry that continues to exist in our region and has every reason that it will continue to exist. It's just going to be, unless things change soon, its size is diminished considerably. So what in this, from 1990, I believe we had 3,400 jobs in the timber industry, and today it's closer to 200 jobs.
Hmm.
And so in that period of decline, we've seen that affect, of course, the population in the region. It is many small communities. In the last 10 years, 25 of the 34 communities in Southeast Alaska have suffered declines in population. This past year, we've seen the Southeast Alaska population stay the same. In fact, it went up slightly in Southeast Alaska, which is bucking a trend. And what we hope is happening is that the effects of the forest products industry really being reduced in size have sort of run their course, for good or bad. There are those few hundred jobs we want are very, very important. There isn't a lot more to lose, quite frankly, if I can put it that way. So that pressure on our population is easing. Now, what is important is what do we bring in that will fill in those gaps and provide opportunities for people in the region.
Mm-hmm. And you, your report is not really about that last sentence so much. You're not prescribing so much as kind of here's the status, here's where we are.
That's right. That's right. And the June Economic Development Council, we do engage actively in working with industries on, you know, how to strengthen the ocean products industry. How do we strengthen even the forest products industry? Even though it's small, every single one of those jobs is extremely important to that person and that company that provides them. So we do that work. But you're right. This report is about giving people an understanding of where we are at this moment, so that they can, you know, people can make their own inferences about where they want to invest and what is the climate.
Brian, we have just a couple of seconds more. Could you go over how people can acquire the report and download it and like that?
Yeah, if you go to jedc.org, which is our website, it'll be front and center on there, and you can download it. We've had great demand for it, so if you try to download it and you can't right away, please come back. As the word spreads, people are going to that site. Just be patient, and hopefully you'll enjoy it.
Thank you. Brian Holst, Executive Director of the Juneau Economic Development Council, has been my guest. He's talked about the new report for the Southeast Alaska Economic Indicators, available on their website and with a limited number of print copies. Take a look. It's some really incredible information, encyclopedic, about the economic status of Southeast Alaska. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Pat.
From listeners like you, and from the Juneau Artist Gallery, a cooperative featuring the work of over 25 local artists and artisans. The Juneau Artist Gallery is open year-round and daily during the summer, located downtown in the Senate Building.
It's 3:46 here at KTOO-FM in Juneau, and my next guest is going to try to spin through the arts, the arts happenings in Juneau.
Yeah.
Nancy DiCerni is here with Arts Up.
Hey, how are you?
I am just fine.
Well, the good news is we have a lot to do and a lot to get through, and we'll just talk as fast as we can, so I hope everybody's taking, what is it that stenographers used to take?
Shorthand.
Yeah,
I think.
Shorthand,
yeah.
That stuff. Yeah. Okay, so this week we've got Perseverance Theater's got 39 Steps. If you haven't seen it, do not miss it. It is hilarious. It's one of the funniest things I've seen in a really long time. Tonight is a pay-as-you-can, so head on over at 7:30 anytime this weekend. Absentee voting is open, of course. You need to be doing that. It is at 4 o'clock. Probably the Alaska Permanent Fund is having an economic forum downtown. Manhattan Shorts, there's a film festival happening over at the Goldtown Nickelodeon at 5 o'clock. Nuclear Bombs, Budgets, and You, the Juneau People for Peace and Veterans for Peace and the Northern Light United Church are presenting this panel discussion at the Juneau Arts and Culture Center at 7 o'clock. The event is free. Come on down for that. There is the beginning of the Messiah Community Sing Fest starts tonight at 7 over at the Resurrection Lutheran Church. This is led by Bruce Simonson. The big plan is that there will be a culminating performance of the Messiah in late April, but people can start now. So come, it'll be tonight and tomorrow night reading, singing through as many of the choruses as possible. All this weekend, Nickelodeon is showing Cave of Forgotten Dreams. Let's see. There's a starting a small business thing on Friday morning at 9. The Kimball Organ Concerts, this next couple of them, is going to feature J. Allen McKinnon accompanied by Rick Trostel on trumpet. So really special noon concerts on Friday nights or Friday afternoons. Those are, no, Friday at noon. Those are free. This is your last day on Friday to go visit the Ted Stevens Marine Research Center. If you're interested, you have to be 16 or older, 789-6050. There is a, it's Soberfest this Friday night, and it starts at 4. 4 o'clock with a family pre-party over at the Zach Gordon Center. That's free. And then the Soberfest itself begins at 6:30 at the Jack. 465-4765 for more information about that. Let's see, we've got Tracy Spring at the Rookery at 7 o'clock. This is a pay-as-you-can event. Also at 7 o'clock, a whole bunch of things. You'll just have to clone yourself. Green Fire, Aldo Leopold, and the Land Ethic for Our Times. Several people from the Forest Service talking. That's the evening at Egan Lecture. It's free out at UAS campus. Again, let's see, the Traveler Duo is performing at Zephyr at 7 o'clock, and Dan Hobson is over classical guitar at the Gold Room. Let's see, Magic Trip, Ken Kesey's Search for a Cool Place, is at the Nickelodeon at 9:30, and at 10 o'clock at the Rendezvous, Alaska's Dirt Road Country Legends, a whole bunch of great musicians over there. The Drama Debate and Forensics Tournament begins on Saturday over at the Juno Douglas High School at 8 o'clock in the morning, runs through till 4, and you're invited to drop in and hear how the Juno kids and all the other Southeast kids are doing. It's always fascinating. The Juno Economic Development Council does this thing Saturday mornings called the Saturday Thing. They just have a big pile of junk there, I guess, and kids get some screwdrivers and hammers and get to do things with them. I'm not exactly sure, but it's a great opportunity for kids to just get their hands on, tinker. I think it's kind of like that. And if you're interested, get more information at 523-2300. Let's see, The Life by the Lynn, a book about the Shrine of St. Therese, written by Christy Loney. She'll be signing the books at Hearthside Books at 1 o'clock on Saturday. Again, you have a second opportunity to see the Short Film Festival at 2 o'clock at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. There is the Rock and Roller Fest on Saturday night. Starts at 6:30 is when the doors open. This is a fundraiser for the Juno Roller Girls. About 7 o'clock, they'll do a demo. This is the Journey Unauthorized concert, which they'll actually begin playing at 9. So it's a whole night of lots of fun. You can get tickets at the Jack, Hearthside Books, Paradise Beach, and online. At 7 o'clock, Hunger Games at the Juno Public Library with the help of the Archery Club and Discovery Southeast. This is an opportunity to learn about hunting and capturing your own food. They promise that all participants will return home unharmed. If you need more information about this, pretty exciting day, 586-5324. You're telling me that I don't have enough time to get through this whole thing. New old-time music with the Rays and Holy Hell at the Rendezvous. We got Mount St. Elias on Sunday at the Nickelodeon. Let's see. Get to the important things. Mark Anthony's vegan cooking demonstration at the Philippine Community Hall at 6:30 on Monday night. As well, there's a belly dancing class at 7. There are, let's see if we want to, it's International Walk to School Day on Wednesday.
On Wednesday?
Yes. So get
you have about 2 or 3 minutes.
Oh, okay.
So you can
well,
down.
I don't know if I'm going to give you that now. Okay, then. Let's see. KRNN starts a weekly concert series. I think it's a monthly concert series. The KRNN concert series starts with Windy Ridge Roundup on Wednesday at 7 o'clock. They will be performing at the Goldtown Nickelodeon. Tickets are $10 in advance or $12 at the door. Also, Ernestine Hayes will be giving a talk, Learning from Nature, Reading from New and Recent Work. It's put on by the Alaska Wildlife Alliance, and it's at the UAS Glacier View Room. This is a free event at 7 o'clock on Wednesday. At 9:30 in the morning on October 6th, A Matter of Balance. This is an 8-session course that ends on November 17th, put out by the Division of Senior and Disability Services to help older people with balance. So it sounds like a really nice event if you're interested. 465-1605, that's free. And also Thursday at 7:30, the Alaska Native Cultures Film Series, Finding Their Own Dance, Reawakening Alaskan Aleutic Arts. This is at the Egan Lecture Hall at the UAS campus, 796-6144. There's lots more, but you'll just have to go to the count.
What day are we on?
Oh, that's next Thursday,
next
week
Thursday.
From,
so
yeah, you know.
That's way out in the future.
It's way out in the future, but okay. Definitely action-packed, and don't miss a thing. If you want to go to the the KTOO website or the JAC website, you can get these calendars and see them all in depth and lots more things that I didn't have time to mention.
I think I was out on the JAC website earlier today, and I think this is on the right side of the screen.
It's on the right side.
Yeah.
And I've had people complain because it's narrow, but if you click on the little plus Google button, it expands it up into a whole big calendar.
So then it's the whole screen and you can see
the whole screen. And yeah.
And can you print off that?
You can print off of it if you want to. I don't really like the way it prints, but Google says you can do it.
Okay.
There is a print option for that.
A Google Calendar?
It's a Google Calendar.
So can you actually subscribe to that and put it into your own Google Calendar if you want to?
You absolutely
can. It overwhelmed my calendar, I think. But.
Yeah, I think Google calendars are fabulous for that very reason. You can have your kids' calendar and your calendar, and then you can subscribe to the Arts Council calendar. And then
also, if somebody has an event coming up, there's a way they can get into that calendar and become one of the people that we try to pass through on this whirly gig thing that happens on Thursday afternoons, but also it's on the page during
and
the
week. And it's also what K2 is going to for their PSAs. So if you have what you would have normally sent as a PSA, put in the subject line the name of the event or the activity, and then in the body, write it out. Really, Google will detect something that should go into a calendar. If you just put the date and the day and the time and the location, it just auto-populates it, which is nice. And then be sure to put enough information so that the person reading the PSA can give the appropriate information.
So if someone were computer dyslexic, as many of us are, and just couldn't figure all that out, is there someone they could talk to help them work it through the first couple of shaky times?
Yeah, you can call us.
Okay. And someone
and that's 586 Arts, and the website or the just go to our website, the instructions are at the bottom of the calendar to tell you what to do.
Wonderful.
How's that?
That's quite a little combined and friendly operation between the station and JAC, I think.
Well, you know, it's always been a goal to have a common community calendar so that we don't all have things going on at the same time and go, what? I didn't know about that.
Yeah.
So if you have something, it doesn't have to be arts related. It can be any sort of activity that you want the community to know about. So give us
Nancy,
a call.
You mentioned a concert that's coming up by Tracy Spring. I think that's, remember the date?
That is coming up on Friday night at 7 o'clock.
Well,
and
it's
at the Rookery.
If I get my buttons right, let's see if we can listen to a little of her music to go out with.
All righty. Thank you.
Was climbing the wall. You pace the floor, my fist on your door. Didn't you hear me call? Everything I need, all I gotta do, eat, sleep, breathe, love, and be loved by you. Everything I need, all I gotta do.
Tomorrow at 3 on the Juno afternoon, our regular host will be back, and Jeff will be talking with the folks who are putting together the Soberfest Friday night. Filmmaker Steve Dunsky and regional forester Beth Pendleton will be here to give us a preview of their Evening at Egan presentation coming up Friday night on conservationist Aldo Leopold. There'll be Writer's Almanac, music, and more tomorrow at 3, so tune in again to Juno afternoon.
Someday we'll be free.
This is KTOO Juno. We broadcast on 104.3 FM in downtown Juno and Douglas. KTOO also broadcasts on these translators. In the Valley and in Auk Bay, you can tune to K276 AF at 103.1. We're on 101.7 as you're driving through Lemon and Schweitzer Creek. On K269AO. Gustavus listens to us on K201 AM on 88.1 MHz. K220BT serves Hoonah at 91.9. And in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait, you can hear KTOO on K210AS, transmitting on 89.9 MHz. In Juneau, you can also receive KTOO on your GCI cable subscription. We're on digital channel 871. KRNN is on digital channel 872. And one up from that, KXLL, can be found at digital channel 873. And, of course, we're also online at ktoo.org.
Once you get to yes, things can move quickly, but getting to yes took way too long in this case.
Today, getting it done took just 5 minutes as the House passed a bill to keep the government running.
For Thursday, September 29th, it's All Things Considered from NPR News.
I'm Melissa Block.
And I'm Michelle Norris.
Coming up, how the once contentious government funding bill sailed to passage.
Texas Governor Rick Perry hits the reset button to recapture his momentum.
Also, a community in Alaska debates the pros and cons of building an enormous mine.
Pebble Mine has brought together a variety of groups that have really never worked together. It's the commercial fishing industry, the sport fishing industry, the conservation groups, as well as the Alaska Native groups.
Plus, scientists use social media to measure the country's mood.
And beer makers celebrate their recession-proof industry.
Now news.
From NPR News in Washington, I'm Jack Spear. Pro-government demonstrators in Syria attacked the convoy of the U.S. ambassador today as he visited an opposition figure in Damascus. NPR Scott Horsley reports the White House quickly condemned the attack.
Ambassador Robert Ford was not injured in the incident, but Syrians loyal to the government hurled rocks and tomatoes at his convoy. White House spokesman Jay Carney called the attack part of an ongoing effort to intimidate diplomats as they try to monitor the Syrian government's brutal crackdown on political protests.
Day after day, Ambassador Ford puts himself at great personal risk to support the legitimate aspirations of the Syrian people.
Carney urged the Senate to support that work by confirming Ford. The ambassador is currently serving on a recess appointment over Republican opposition. Scott Horsley, NPR News, the White House.
Dozens have been killed after the Syrian army shelled a town in Syria. According to activists there, the town of Rustan has been a hub for defecting soldiers who've organized an armed resistance. NPR's Deborah Amos reports from Beirut.
Syrian deserters call themselves the Free Syrian Army and have a Facebook page. But on the ground, they fight only with the light weapons they had when they quit. The city of Rustan has been one hub for the rebels, now surrounded by the Syrian army that has battled them for three consecutive days. Rebel soldiers only number in the hundreds, say Western sources in Damascus, and are no match for an assault by tanks and helicopters. Army deserters reached online acknowledge that this first major fight is likely lost and are documenting the dead. Deborah Amos, NPR News, Beirut.
Economic growth was a bit more robust during the second 3 months of this year than initially thought. That's based on the government's upward revision of its second quarter gross domestic product number. According to the Commerce Department, GDP, the broadest measure of goods and services in the U.S. economy, expanded at a 1.3% annual rate. However, economist Hugh Johnson says the economic numbers are still nothing to write home about.
The economy overall, whether we measure it by employment or gross domestic product, has slowed to a very, very anemic pace.
In revising the GDP number upward, the government cited stronger than expected spending by consumers and export growth above previous estimates. First-time claims for unemployment benefits fell by a larger than expected amount last week. The Labor Department says weekly jobless claims were down by 37,000 to a seasonally adjusted 300.